The smartest way to do it. Okay.
Okay.
So we have a small piece at the end over here of the Pyrrhic.
Just give me one sec to just get a few things together.
Yeah. Okay.
Robert Lafiansky.
Yeah, I'm on.
Ready to go when you're ready.
Okay, good. So we have a small piece here.
Are you taping it for Matisseau?
I am taping it, believe me, the fear the fear of Matisseau is upon us.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a pericale trefusome of Christine's Zoraya trefel atzmai. Actually, the lashon over there is ezut tamed chacham, haroya trefel atzmai, and then Rav Chisda says ezut seni matanis yichya zoraya trefel atzmai. Olamaylo sivatar pirash and sivatar pekdal is where he explains it all. The ikapirse kisona matanis hayne sheni mekabel mizulasa dava. Sona matanis means he doesn't want to take from somebody else.
Somebody else.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, Dr.
Yeah.
Silva's on, they say. Okay.
Okay.
One second. This is. Why am I.
Why am I
Echo?
echo?
I'll try. Hello, is this better?
Yeah, that's better.
Oh.
That's great.
So he says. Aber ich kapiere sich, ich soll immer tun, dass heine schon im Mekabels los und dover, wie er schon mit, dass sie stappkos, wie sie nicht schon im Mekabels los und dover. Ki af hai ro le hashla trefa in a mikabel mezlosa shum hanoa, ve ro a trefa la atzmoi. Zeo shu seine le gamri shem mikabel mezlosa. So even something like be like looking at a trefa, he's self-sufficient. So that's the that is the and same thing he says at Talmud Chachmur a trefa la atzmoi. I want to sort of complement this with what it says over there actually in the Sivat Torah Perek Dalet. Over there, he speaks more about the Talmud Chacham Roya Trefel Atzmoy. He makes the following point.
Can I just clarify? Does that mean that the Maharal's learning that is really not a trefa?
That was really what?
That's really a kosher? That the
No,
bean was really
you're right.
kosher?
He trusts himself not to make a wrong decision. You know, it's a trefa. I mean, we don't have that feeling of what a treifa is because we get a piece of meat and this product is kosher treifa. A guy has a behemoth, this might be the month's worth of food or the month's worth of goods and if he's a butcher and there's a treifa there, the cheshek to be matrich like halacha is very very strong. My father told me that. There was a place in Europe, in the Mir, I think it was, where he grew up. There was like, when they shecht it, there was like a special enclosed room where the Rav, if there was a problem, the Rav would come, take a look at the animal. He would then go into the locked room and then yell out whether it's kosher or treif. Because if he said it's treif, the shochet and the butcher was hot-headed people with knives and they would charge at him. You know, it's like you imagine you're a builder and you're not a huge kaplan, but you built a building, and then the guy says, no good. There's a grave underneath here. Not built to specifications. Raise the building, please. I mean, you're talking about an animal. So people would not trust themselves with it, and they would ask somebody else. So it means he feels himself capable of looking at a trade himself. That's the sense of the Gemara. So the so when he speaks about Talmud Chacham, I'll just fill in the piece that he says over there is that it's interesting. The halacha of treifa, when you take a look in Zvachim, there are a few things learned from the pasuk of treifa and the Gemara has a klal, something called anything that's yotzo mimichitzaso. like basa kachim that came out of that went out of the perimeter of kachim of the Beis Hamikdash. If an animal sticks out, if a fetus sticks out a foot and brings it back in again, there's a special klal which seems to include, and a treif is also like that. It's something that sort of has gone over the perimeter from the living to the non-living. It's and that's why it's not within the makom of things that are for us to use, kind of. That's sort of a sense of it in a more metaphysical way. So at any rate, the person doesn't feel any meshicha for something that's not for him. It's something which is it's part of that midah, in the big sense of the word istapkos, where a person wants the things that are there for him. It's so mashal ma'adam, let's give us the crude mashal kind. Let's say I'm looking at a place with cars, and I see nice cars and fancy cars, so I keep looking with an eye, oh, I wish I had this car, that car, the other car. Imagine I'm a mechanic working in a big garage, and I have to fix a car, and I walk over to the car and ask the guy, is this the one you want to work on? The guy says, no, the other one. It doesn't mean anything to me, because all I'm interested in is which car I have to work on. I'm not looking at the car and saying, well, if it's nice, I'd like to have it. My question is only, well, which car am I supposed to deal with now? So a person whose perspective in the world is not the things that he wants, he needs, but his question is, what is meant for me to deal with? Then if it's strafe, then that animal is not meant for me to eat. And that's that. It's not me. That's the sense that he tries to say over there, that he does not have any hankering for something which is not his, actually. You can add a... Sorry, you want to ask something? Okay, you can add something that the treifa, it says, is eino chai. A treifa is something that doesn't live. Seinu matanis yichya. In other words, on treifa specifically, it's interesting that there's kind of a sort of issue of that's where we see the study of Matanis Yichya, L'umas the treifas in a chai. I assume treifas also chosen. Nevela is also treif. So nevela, you don't have so often a shaila of nevela, because the shechita was good or wasn't good. It's very hard to examine afterwards. There are certain things you can see if the knife is nick. But treifa is living nominally, but it doesn't belong to the living. It's in the perimeter of the living, but it's flawed to a degree that it's not there. So those are the points he makes. I want to speak a little bit in this context about Yonah Yomi. This is the last time we meet before Pesach. I'd like to talk about this in the context of Pesach. And the Maral in Gevuris, in on the Agadah, has a very, very fascinating discussion about the Lechem Oni aspect. And he tries to understand, it's in Perek Nun Aleph, and he tries to understand what is why is it that matzah, which is supposed to be the simen of Geula, we eat it Beseba, is called Lechem Oni. So, you know, there are some pshatim that it's kind of very poor, it's dry, crusty, low, and all those things. And that's very, very strange, because it's something which we're talking about, the end of the day, the part of the Seder that reflects the Geula, the Shichru. That as opposed to the Mara. With Korech, the matzah, Mara, and Korban Pesach, but the Mara is the bad of Mitzrayim. The matzah is what's good. It's Geula, Cheres, whatever you want to call it. That's an issue that he discusses. So it doesn't make sense. He also brings up Pshat, that some people said they fed it to the slaves because it stayed in their stomach for a long time, which we certainly can testify as being an accurate description of matzah, but also it doesn't make any sense. So he says like this. His point is geula is dafka with lechem oni, and he also contrasts it with the other things that you have in the Leila Seder, which are supposed to be ashiras. We drink wine, and we don't break a bone. We act as bale ashiras. So what's the pshat? How do you reconcile those two things in the activities of the night? So the Maral says, I'll sort of paraphrase and bring out the point that he makes. It all says like this: in the relationship between a kone and kinyonim, an oni is by far more of a ben chayrin than an ashir. In other words, if a person is somebody who is dependent, if a person has many things that he is dependent on to define him, to give him his metzias, then the person is actually an inferior person. For instance, let's take an example. We all know the beauty of a machine, an old-fashioned machine that doesn't have many buttons and gadgets, because of the fact that it's less prone to breaking down. It doesn't need much. It needs two elements, and it works. As opposed to something complex, which has many elements, and take away any one element, and the whole thing doesn't work. A machine that needs two pieces to work versus a machine that needs 25 pieces to work, the one that needs two pieces to work is much, much more flexible and freer than the thing that needs 25 pieces to work. A person who must have this, and this to be is by far a more beholden person than a person who doesn't need it. In a certain sense, the person with a knapsack, have knapsack will travel, is the freest person in the world. He's got very little that can constrain him. Wherever his feet can take him, that's where he goes. So geula lies in having as little needs as possible. So for instance, let's take matzah. He says there are three categories of matzah. You have matzah, you have lechem, you have matzah ashira, and you have matzah. So he says, lechem ashira is what we would call cake or some nice pastry. It has bread, it has flour and water and oil and sugar and spices and whatnot. So he says, it is more complex than lechem only. In order for something to count as a cookie, it can't just have flour. So matzah has just flour and water. Put the flour and water in, and you've got a matzah. So the existence of matzah is the freest existence. It doesn't require anything else. Then he says, a chiluk, a cookie requires sugar and, let's say chocolate and oil to make it into a cookie or an egg. But those are not things that that go into defining the dough itself. These are sort of additions that the cookie needs. He says chametz means that the flour and water itself still needs a process to have it undergo a certain process, which will then give it its name. So he says the ranking, as bread being the absolute furthest point away from matzah, and matzah shir being somewhat away, and matzah being what we're talking about, is because when you need something to define your very self for your most basic function, your core definition, that is a lot more mishubed than something that just needs an addition. So at any rate, the chayrus lies in the oini. Oini in the sense of someone his whose existence is just his self is a ben chayr. Now, let's take an example of a car. If I have a car and I can't walk down the block without taking the car, and if it, and I, you know, that means that as far as I'm concerned, just like some people need a cane, I need a car. But let's say I do walk freely to wherever my feet can take me, and I then use a car for those places that my feet can't take me. So then it becomes an extension of my chayrus rather than a limitation of my chayrus. Because, so we have three people. One person doesn't have a car. He can walk a mile, 2 miles, and that is his freedom of range. The second person has a car and has gotten so used to it that he can't walk a half a block without a car, and that person is the most meshubet. The third person has a car, walks freely a mile or two, and then from 2 miles to 2,000 miles, he uses a car. So ultimately, once the person's etzem mitzias has been defined in a certain way, everything else becomes extensions rather than core definition. Matzah, lechem, is the very essence of us. You know, eating bread is our core mazon, and it defines us. If the bread that we eat would be in any way would be totally in something else other than the simplest elements possible, then we are avodim. So the lechem of geula, the lechem, the staff of life, of freedom, is simplicity, is anius. Masha ein kein, once we have that, once we live on matzah, so the wine, the everything else that we have, the seba, all of the various things that go, or the kalem noyim and so on, all of those things that go into that are actually, they become extensions instead of definitions. And then we're free people because of it. We're free people plus we enjoy malchus. So the Maharal's lashon there is the geula itself is defined by the lechem. The activities of Nechorin is defined by everything else that we add to it. Once we've been Chayim, we can use the other things in a way that enhances us rather than takes away from us. So just like, imagine if the matzah, let's take a fourth example. If the matzah is matzah and we smear on it jelly or whatever, then we're just adding to the matzah. We're not in any way affecting and changing the core definition of matzah. We say matzah is very good, but you can use it for this, for this, for this, for this, and this. That makes it, that's what the matzah is. So al kaponim, the musig, it's very interesting. Chazal say, when we speak about anius, we always think of the downside. Chazal have described two types of ani. One is called an evyon. An ani is someone who is lacking things. An evyon is someone who is to'ev l'chol davar. He craves various things. It's understood that an evyon is by far worse than an ani. But it's hard to understand exactly what are we talking about. I mean, if you're hungry, you're hungry. If you think about it, if a person has only one shirt, he has one shirt. Whether he craves for other things or not, does that make him more poor? I mean, some guys have one shirt and that's what they wear, and that's it. Many Shiva Bach have many shirts. They still wear only one shirt. So what is the evyon to? And I think the depth of the definition is like this. If I don't have X, Y, or Z, but I don't need it, then I'm not missing it in a very substantial way. So let's say I have one shirt, three shirts, or whatever it is, but I don't feel less because I don't have the other elements. Then I'm not a chaser. Say that I have two shirts, and so I have to do a lot more washes. Every other day I have to wash a shirt. That's that. But I'm not. I can't say that something's missing in me. But if I crave that extra shirt, then I'm missing it. I feel that I'm not a person unless I have the extra shirt. It's extraordinary the difference between the Ani and the Evyon. The Evyon is a lot worse off because he's a half a person. It's due to his perspective, but that's the Metzius. I guess I can sort of juxtapose two stories. One of them I just heard yesterday from somebody firsthand. The other one is something I saw a long time ago. And I guess just in this context to put the two stories together. We had yesterday a Baal Tshuva couple in our house from Eretz Yisrael. They came to look for apartments area. Wonderful people, wonderful, wonderful people. He's actually quite a successful businessman. I mean, he's young, but whatever it is, he's doing well, whatever he's doing, but he's been learning a few years. He's a very fine fellow. His wife's family is extremely well-to-do, extremely into living the good life, and everything's all about the good life. And a lot of being very upset with their children who don't think that that's necessarily a good life. And they were with them in a place, and then they found a very, very fancy kosher restaurant, and in some place. And the fellow's father-in-law ordered a half a chicken. I forgot the name of the dish, but whatever it is, it's a half a chicken. Instead, Rachmana Litzlan, instead of being a half a chicken, was two quarters. It was, I don't know exactly, it didn't come, it came as two quarters rather than a half. He was furious, and he called the manager and he said, "What is this? It says a half a chicken, this is not half a chicken, this is two quarters, it's not half a chicken." He said, "Yes, you're right, I'm sorry, it's a mistake, and this and that." And the guy said, he says, "What can we do for you? Anything." He says, "There is absolutely nothing you can do for me. You've ruined my meal. You've ruined my day and possibly my vacation." Now, and he meant it. Chassid, these weren't some words. He wasn't trying to get anything for the guy. It was ruined. It was ruined. And the wine wasn't, it was very, they had a lot of, there are selective expensive wines, but it wasn't quite. And Bemela, and you ask yourself, what a terrible life. When two quarters of a chicken don't add up to half a chicken, then the person is really, really a cripple. Terrible. This person's life is full of anger and bitterness, and can't understand, if there would be a God, why would he punish him so severely and with such terrible punishments? That's one story. I heard it yesterday. And what had brought this person's daughter to Yiddishkeit is she found happy people who are just at ease, and they don't have a fraction of their parents, but they're just very happy and everything's okay. A story that I remember from about 40 years ago was I was the Meir Yeshiva, and Reb Nochum was the one everybody came to learn from. Reb Nachum Shiurim were awesome, and Reb Nachum lived and breathed the Torah. That was him. He was a very happy, usually upbeat person, but it was all about learning. He was just into learning. That was it. He had multiple sclerosis, and the disease took its toll progressively. And at a certain time, when Reb Chaim's youngest son Meir Shmuelovitz got married in Haifa, he decided to, so everybody went. In those days, Haifa was like a big trip. And Reb Nachum was not up to it. Just, people, it wasn't felt right. And he stayed behind. And it was like a realization that, things are not there. They're not what they are anymore. And, I think it was a sort of very, a bit of an emotional thing. Everybody went. And they asked for two people to volunteer to stay behind and to look after the apartments, nobody should come, whatever. The Rashivas lived in the yeshiva. So naturally, myself and a friend of mine were a lot happier to have the free run of the Rashivas apartments and to sort of, in a polite way, have a look around rather than to go to Haifa and that. So I was there, and I went to Reb Nochum. As I met Reb Nochum climbing up the steps, the word climbing is the right description, to Meiriv. Now, Reb Nochum lived in the basement of the yeshiva. It was underground. There was two bedrooms where the windows were underground. They counted as a miklat. If it was a heavy rain, the guys would have to come bail water out. The cat occasionally found it pleasant to march in there. And some of the kids had to sleep upstairs in the office because they didn't have room. But it was very upbeat. People were, you know, Reb Nochum was a very charismatic, attractive person, and learning and so on. But that was him. That's what he had. And he's climbing up the steps. And I scream and I say, you know, Reb Chaim had asked me to watch over things. If the Rashiv is going up for Meiriv, maybe I'll watch his apartment for him. And he sort of looked at me. And like was thinking, and like he was sort of, absent-minded, said, "Watch my apartment? What do I have that they could steal? I don't have anything." And then like his eyes missed it over, and he said, "But I'm not missing anything." It's hard for me to describe how out of character the emotion was, those words. He was not... He didn't speak Musa. He wasn't a, he never expressed emotions. I mean, it was a very upbeat person, very levitic, very alive, very enthusiastic, but no emotions other than really in the learning and the talking, the arguing and so on. Nothing. And this was like a rare moment. But that phrase, seeing him climbing up the steps, in a certain sense, he was the envy of everybody. He was a very charismatic person and his learning was awesome and people loved it. But what he really possessed was nothing. Was a basement with two bedrooms and a living room that served as a share room, basically. But the way he phrased it, he said, I don't have anything, but on the other hand, I can't really say I'm missing anything. It was such a and then it was Klander to Meyer, and that was it. And I was trying to think when I heard this story yesterday. So how unfortunate is a person who needs everything, and how fortunate doesn't need anything? Certainly, the things once. If we don't need anything, then the things we have, we do right by them. And we see them as something that we do things with. They're a charge and so on. And Leila Seda has those two things. We live on Lech HaMayni. That's our bread. Our bread of sustenance is the simplest possible. And we express it in Big Day Malchus and even with B'nai Melachim. We're B'nai Melachim who didn't lose because of B'nai Melachim. We only gained. It starts with the fact that the person in this tochen strives and needs the simplest, and his ability to handle is, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu charged him with, that's what he can handle. Okay, any brief questions? Anything? Okay, so Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Okay, Chag Kosher V'Sameach. And we'll ask the first week of this month, whenever that might be.
So right, the first Thursday after Shchaidish, Bezat Hashem.
Okay. Bye-bye.